Folks, welcome back to the iHealth channel, iHealth Radio, the Fit and Fab channel, the network with your host Hurricane H. We're going to go all over the place here with a topic that is, I think it's important for all of us, my guest is going to take us through a journey and a discussion that's going to help us really understand a little bit more about ourselves, discover ourselves, our self-care, talking about freedom, peace, joy, manifestation. So we're going to talk about a lot of things today. It's going to be good. And my guest is a seasoned meditation teacher, and she's been assisting others with their transformation through holistic health and wellness for a couple of decades. So she is definitely the go-to person when it comes to this discussion we're going to have today. So without any further ado, I have with me Kimberly Brown. Kimberly, welcome to the show.
It is great to be with you. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. And, this topic is an important topic because it comes up in a lot of discussions that one of the things that we need to learn is to meditate and take the time for ourselves. And you just happen to be an expert at this stuff. so we got to touch on all that stuff today. So let's do that. But before we go into the details, can you tell us a little bit more about yourself and your background? What got you into this?
Sure. Yeah. Thanks for asking. I found when I was young, I was starting to have a number of what I call illuminative experiences, and we all have them. So sometimes when I tell my stories, people go, oh, I wish I could have that experience. But actually, if we look a little more deeply, we all have moments where we relax into the moment and we experience a connection with ourselves and our environment. We experience something. Now, my language would be more spiritual, but it doesn't even need to be spiritual. For instance, let's say you're in a really breathtakingly beautiful place. It's really common to be taken with it for just a moment. So even if you're living a life of high stress, there might be a moment where you're like, oh, you're struck by the sunset. Or maybe when something really beautiful happens in your life, it could be a birth of a baby. It could be a special moment in your own life's work. It could be a big change that makes you really happy. So we all have a lot of illuminative moments. Well, I was having these illuminative moments, and what was happening is I was discovering that all of life is about this one thing, is coming into our own wholeness. That there really isn't anything else. And even the things that we say are, I long to do this, I desire to accomplish this, or this would make me happy. The object of our focus reaps the fruit of us discovering our own inner happiness and freedom. So I became an adventurer on that path when I was about 5 or 6 years old. And that is not to say that I didn't have some incredibly dark moments where I was like, what am I doing here in this world? Like, but for the most part, I found myself unable to get away from this worldview that every human being, that each one of us is meant to wake up to the power and beauty of who and what we are. And it led me to a lot of choices that supported that. I joined a monastery for 10 and a half years. I did grad work studying the nature of the adult awakening process or spiritual journey, psycho-spiritual development. And then I've been serving others for 23 years. Meditation is a strong component of it, but it's not all that's involved. But it's a really good start point because it represents something for all of us, meditation itself. Yeah.
Okay. So let me see. There's quite a bit there. I need to break it down a little bit. So, well, the first thing is the idea of you starting this journey in a very early age. And so that there's a question that I have about that, because how can someone really realize that? I mean, at that early age, right? So that's one. Because I mean, was it exactly what it was? Obviously it was for you. I mean, you pursued it, but for someone that's listening to it right now, they were like, well, I have a lot of moments in my life. I don't know. Was that it? You know, so that would be a question mark for a lot of people, right? Was there anything specific? I know you talked about like some events, things that happen in your life that are happy moments, but at five, I mean, every moment is a happy moment. You know, so what was specific, you know, that really got you like, you know, hey, this is, you know, boom, we got to do something about it. You know, I got to get this new journey. Cause I mean, that's early to make decisions, right? I mean, you know, you're still in the control with your parents and, you know, there's a school system and there's a lot of influence at that point. So you making that call on the early days, it's a pretty tough one. And a lot of people, you know, may question. Now, those that have kids, you know, maybe something we have to look at, you know, like to see if our kids potentially have that moment and maybe there's a way to assist in that. But that's the reason I'm asking the question. Like, what should we look for if, you know, if we are at that moment or we see someone at that moment and age?
At such a young age, yeah. So do you want me to share a specific experience first and then go into what sure. might be markers of that? Well, I think children, like you said, tend to be pretty energized about life in general, right? You get really excited even about your favorite ice cream cone. Mm-hmm. Or even if you just get to take a walk and get a really cool stone you find. And so I believe at that stage in our growth, we are all really available to the joy of the moment. We're not being self-reflective usually. We're just really experiencing life. And where I made a decision was, and this was a key moment, I'm going to share this story, but there were numerous moments that added to it. And we lived in Cincinnati. And I was total geek. I loved school. So I loved fall. You know, I loved everything now I'm from the age where you get your cigar box and you decorate it and you get the the pencils and the scissors and everything you put in. I loved everything about it, getting my schedule. And we would walk to and from school. And I used to love walking home from school. I loved it. And especially in the autumn when the leaves would start to change in the Midwest. And I remember one day when the leaves were turning and the wind had picked up and there was a little bit of, it wasn't summer anymore. There was that little bit of chill in the air. You could feel it. It just felt like change. My experience of that, without me thinking about it, was all of the earth was dancing. And I began dancing all the way home because I felt naturally, again, this isn't me reflecting, I felt naturally that I wanted to be part of the dance. And so I danced my way home and I was getting happier and happier and happier to the point where everything just seemed lit up with light. And I felt that I was a part of it. And I stopped at the end of our cul-de-sac. And I was just taking it all in. I was so happy. I was taking it all in. And then I was looking across the street at this tree that was beautiful. And all the leaves were going like this on the branches because the wind was rustling through them. And they had turned color. So it was very beautiful. It felt like, this is my experience, it felt like the tree pulled me to itself. Like it said, look at me. And so I was like really looking at the tree. And then all of a sudden, one leaf pulled my whole attention. And I was just absorbed into this moment looking at this leaf. And then from nowhere, the leaf broke off the branch and it began to descend to the ground. And I did not solicit this, but from really deep within me, this existential question came up at such a young age. It was like, I was really sad. Is that all life is about? Because the leaf represented dying to me. And again, this wasn't in my head. It was just arising really quickly from deep within. And right as that happened, where I had this anguish, this existential meaning of life anguish, time felt like it stopped. And it felt like these veils pulled back and I had this direct experience that everything is being and becoming in an eternal source, an eternal being. And that all life, including my own, that's what it is. We're here being and becoming in this source. At that time in my life, I used the word God, and God is an appropriate word too, if it works for you. But what happened that was so interesting with that experience was not just the insight that happened, but I noticed that my fear was washed away and my sadness was washed away. And that's what drew me. Because as soon as I witnessed that, that insight set me free, I was like, wow, 100% yes, I am in. This is my adventure. This is my life. And it still remained a very active worldview and still remains the way I open up to the unknown and I meet life's circumstances is from that place. I didn't share it with anybody. So if you're an adult and you're listening to this and you're wondering if your children are having these experiences, because all children are having them to a certain degree, I don't know if they're reflecting, because I was reflecting on the experience and gained the insight. Like my mind went, ah, I had an aha. I think the easiest way for children and adults is ask questions of our experiences. For instance, let's say you had that beautiful aha moment at the sunset that I just pulled out and as an example. Sometimes we just let that go right by and then we let the stressors of our life extinguish what happened in that moment. One of the most powerful things we can do is stay with it and take a few minutes like, wow, why is this leaving me feel so much like everything is okay? We go through our lives wondering if everything's going to be okay. I mean, there are so many challenges in life. We can stop in those moments and relax. What's happening here? And what am I resting into? And what's happening within side of me? Because we can also think that it's only happening on the outside. I could have said that it was all about the leaf. But it wasn't, because what happened was I changed inside and whatever was there was washed away and I was restored to a total freedom in relation to dying and in relation to living. So that's where we have the great opportunity. And if we do have children, when we see them so happy, I mean, you don't want to do it all the time because they'll be like, leave me alone. Right?
That's exactly how they're going to say it. Can I just, mom, leave my room. I want to play.
Totally. But there are moments when we can get a little closer with our children and say, oh, that is really happy making. Like, what's making you so happy? Or what's happening? Like, do you feel it in your heart? Do you feel it in your stomach? Do you feel it in your body? Those are ways that we can help our children navigate staying close to their center versus moving into being stressful as they become adults. So that's a practical example. But you asked a really hard question to know how we could recognize and support that in our little ones and in each other. But in each other, meditation is a very powerful practice.
Yeah. Well yes. And that the reason I asked that is because, first of all, just listening to you, I mean, it's almost coming through the screen, the magnitude of what you felt then. And this is a while back, right? And you live in it, you're describing it like you was just now. I mean, it's like the moment is really anchored and really printed in your mind and your body and soul. It's like, yeah, it's right there. And you know, I think everybody listening and watching right now can relate to a moment that they had that same feeling. Because I think we all had those moments where, like, you just stand and you're like, wow, you're in awe and you feel something different. But what's deep about this is that you went probably at a younger age to a higher level that I think even adults may not be able to tap into today. You know, and I'm not, you know, judging, but it's very difficult to imagine someone really reflecting on that and alive and getting and making the peace with the concept itself, because that's a big fear. I think one of the hardest things that we have in life is thinking about that. And, you know, it's a matter of fact, I just did a show and we talked about that. Like, you know, we need to have that tough conversation about it because it's real. But having an early discussion with yourself about, like, you know, right, hey, I'm cool with that. You know, life is full. I mean, I got to live to the fullest. Because we established that, and I think that's a good way to look at it, right? Once we put our fear away that, you know, that moment is going to come. Like I always say, the only certain thing in life is death, which ironically sounds as weird as it does, but it's a fact. So therefore, why do I have to worry about that moment when I can worry about, you know, living to the fullest and happiest and being in Zen, right? But I mean, obviously there's other things. I mean, for those that believe in a hereafter, whatever, there's always preparation, if you want to call it that way, you know, doing the right thing, you know, you don't want to go to the wrong place. And so we don't want to go religious on that one. But the fact is, at the end of the day, if you at least, you know, you're good about it, you know, in life, then you can approach life differently. You can have a positive attitude. You can have a better mindset. You can have a better impact on the environment and your family. You will deal with things much better than the person who may not be in peace with that particular thought, right? So it's a little different. And I love what you said that, or those who have kids, you know, you don't want to overdo it, but maybe interact more. Not it is not easy, you know, it's easier said than done. As you know, we're talking about it sounds easy, but I'm sure as parents, it's very difficult to have those. I mean, I'm a parent myself. You know, I don't even remember that I have that kind of moment with my kids. You know, I said it because I don't think I've thought about that. You know, yeah, I mean, now that I think of it, I was like, ooh, okay, I think I missed that boat. but it's not, you know, it's very hard, right? I mean, at least for those that are listening who have not missed the boat yet, if you're still there, you know, maybe it's time for you to just take a break and go back and, you know, and spend some time. So that's one thing. But it is a very high level of observation, you know, and, you know, wondering and pondering about everything that was around you. Now you did say something that is magical in a way that you're coming and you're looking at the leaves, you know, and the winds, and you feel the chill, and but someone can tell you, well, I don't have the same environment as you, right? I live in a city. I don't see leaves. I see, you know, buildings. I see cars and lights and other things. So maybe the experience will be different, or maybe not. What do you say to that for someone that may have that challenging question?
So you're saying that because I had such a beautiful environment that I was in, that if you're not in an environment that's not so beautiful, now the pat answer, and pat answers aren't very satisfying, is that really all of life is beautiful and we don't see it. We're conditioned in a lot of ways to find distaste and to have distrust. So when we begin to heal those parts of ourselves, we can, I've got a glass of water here with a, you know, it's got beveled edges. I could be holding this glass and have a very deep moment of sweetness just because the glass is beautiful. It's a shade of blue without it being an intellectual thing, because that doesn't work. We can't control things with our minds. We want to open up to the direct experience. The same with just simply our breath. We always have our breath with us. And there's something incredibly awe-inspiring about what breath does and how it feels. We get really disconnected from that because it doesn't help us manage the details we need to take care of if we're sitting focusing on our breath, or it doesn't seem to, right? So even if your environment is a stressful environment, there are ways to refashion your point of focus so that you have an experience of the beauty you're actually walking in. And there are perspectives and practices. And ultimately, you're changing your perspective, right? Because when we have a point of focus and we have a negative take on it, it's going to give off brain chemicals that reinforce negativity, fashion neural pathways, release stressors in the body. But if we shift our perspective and that negative perspective, that negative point of focus, the way we look at things dissolves, we discover it's pretty easy to have a positive focus. Now, there's a real big difference between easy and simple, right? Because the process is simple because we're made for it. But the process is complicated because we're complicated. So it's one of those great paradoxes. I don't know if you like talking about paradox. I love paradoxes because
love it. Go for it.
They're crazy, right? Like, how can it be simple and hard? Doesn't simple mean that it should be easy? Doesn't simple mean I should be able to do it immediately? If all my freedom is right within me already, then why am I not free? Right? There's a paradox right there. If all of my resources that I need to live a life of happiness and wholeness and peace and exhilaration is right here already going on some level, what is wrong that I seem so far away from it? Right? And largely, it's because we're taught that we're masters of our life by the use of our minds. So we're taught that our minds, that are so amazing, so powerful, so influential, are the way we come to this kind of freedom. And buying that is actually an untruth. It's simply not true. Our minds are not the masters. So like with that leaf experience, that came about not because my mind was working through something, but I had a direct experience of something. And it was a surrendering of my thoughts, not consciously, but just by virtue of being caught up in the beauty of the moment. So when we make the choice to let our minds off the hook, our minds don't have to solve all our problems, our minds don't have to figure it out, our minds don't have to orchestrate our full day. When we let our minds off the hook, we can discover a pathway that lets the mind be of service to freedom rather than being the agent of freedom. That's pretty dense
and philosophical. There's all of the above. But so there's a few things that are very powerful in what you're just describing. First of all, the idea of a child, right, compared to an adult, right? The child is probably at the highest level of innocence. One, two, is probably at the emptiest level of stress and other, you know, burdens of life, right? To a degree, today, even children at a young age, they have a lot of pressure and stuff. But the idea is that you put kids, they usually find fun and everything, right? It's just the way it is. As we mature, you know, I guess life becomes a little bit more of a burden. But going about the paradox of it is that we are the paradox. I mean, I think humans are paradox on themselves, because you're right. We have the capabilities of both sides. We can be here, we can be here. We're both, you know, at the same time. We are free, but not free, because it's choices we make. Because as you said, we use the mind too much and we overthink everything, as opposed to, you know, cool off on things and reflect on things. I think the majority of us, and again, not judging, but it, based on what I see, based on what we hear, but based on all the things and how people are behaving and reacting to life, we are not taking the moment to, like you said, breathe and just kind of pause. I think that's the thing. If we all did that, as a matter of fact, part of some of the exercises that they do, like the box breathing or box, process, where you actually breathe in, hold, you know, stop, you know, all that stuff. It's used in psychiatry, it's used in therapy, used in a lot of different formats, because breathing is a big thing, right? And when you do that, you can really just take a moment. As a matter of fact, again, when I started the discussion, I did mention like meditation is being discussed in almost every aspect, even in business, you know, even in success stories, you know, there's a level of top folks who really are achieving a lot of stuff in their lives. You know, they take time for themselves, physically, mentally, spiritually. They do all of the above. Meditation is part of that. It depends what they do, but, you know, in terms of how they approach it, but there's a lot of ways to do that, right? And you take the time to appreciate life, to appreciate things. A moment, as you said, you know, the sunset, right? A sunrise can be different. You're looking at waves, it can be, you know, a moment. You look at trees, it can be a moment. I've seen this in potentially, like, you know, in real life, and I've seen this in movies, literally, when they show you like maybe a butterfly and a child is just amazed at the butterfly. They just stare at the butterfly, right? And we've seen that, I mean, or a little, I don't know, any little thing, right? Kids do that all the time. Adults don't do that as much. Yet yeah. We all have a kid and a child in with us. We still have our own old self within. What do you think to that? What do you think about that one?
Yeah, and you know, I love what you're pointing to, and I think I would just compliment your language in that our essential nature, which children tend to be a bit more living from or in contact with, is always free. And I find that in my work, since I've been serving people for so long, is remembering or reflecting on the possibility that I don't have to get somewhere even to grow in freedom, that actually my essential nature is free, loving, peace-filled, resourceful, energized, focused, and all the other qualities that we all would love to embody. So reflecting on the possibility that I am already that, I'm just learning to remember it or discover it, can be a little softer entry point to that, because life can feel hard. And there are many, many challenges in life that reinforce the feeling of hardness that takes place. And part of that breathing, or the meditation, or practices like that that are so available to all today, what they do is they create some space so that you begin to experience it. For instance, like if you're listening, and I can tell from your dialogue, you have a lot of listeners that are already reflecting on these things. So I don't want to contribute something that everyone's like, oh, yes, of course. So, you know, if I am being too simplistic, you know, stopping for just a moment, spending 5 minutes a day in a breathing practice or some form of meditation practice, that time alone, what that does is that opens up the mind, the heart, and the body to experience the influx of chemicals to refashion the neural pathways in a way that you taste what you're longing for. And you may not be stable in it. It may seem black and white. Like, well, when I meditate, I feel great. And then the moment the timer goes off, all my stresses come back on me. And that's oftentimes the human experience. That's not because the time in meditation wasn't real. That's because we're weak. We're not practiced enough yet. What will happen in time is where the stress can be here, and then like we're living here and we taste this. What happens in time is it begins to go like this. And without even realizing it, we begin to live from this state and meet the stressed situations, not like our life is stressful, but that we have passing challenges and then we can meet them. So I think, and now I've been teaching for 23 years, and I travel and teach to people from all different backgrounds. And I've seen over and over again that this is possible for everybody. It may take you a longer or shorter amount of time than somebody else. We don't compare, we don't judge. There's reasons for our paths that are unknown to us, but it's possible for all of us.
Well, thank you. And you know, I'm listening to you. First of all, you're doing great. So as far as, you know, the audience and you take it your way. And yeah, sometimes whether we restate things or we state them differently or, you know, simplify them, sometimes it's even easier. But I love what you said. It's really like everything else, right? You ease yourself into it slowly, slowly. And then you kind of flip it over. Like it's still there, but now you have the strength to control it. You're in charge, as opposed to letting the stresses and all the stuff, you know, in charge and basically like taking your day by the thunder and the storm, right? So it's kind of that kind of thing. So the balance is really there. You switch in your, you know, the where the strengths are, you know, of your new self or your found self. Like, you know, you're basically rediscovering yourself. And I think that's really what it is. I mean, we all have a better self. Let's call it for what it's worth, right? Okay. And the problem is, do we really know who that is? Do we dive in and try to get it out? Or, you know, that's another question. You know, you talked about, you mentioned something, you know, interesting that you said, we are supposed to be free, right? But we're not free. And yet we are free. So I mean, really, we are free to choose. We are free to do things. We are free to make a selection on all our actions, right? Yet we still think that we're not, because somehow we're tied by, you know, I guess, restraints, you know, of the world, right? And I think those are the things that we capture and adopt throughout, you know, our childhood. Like, so since we're kids, we start growing, and then you start picking up all these things and these elements from the outside world, right? whether, you know, again, I mentioned influences, your parents are the first ones, then you have your school system, your friends, your entourage, then your colleagues at work, and so on and so forth. And then you have all the news, the media, this, that, the other, and we don't separate ourselves, you know, and like you said, taking a moment for ourselves. I think that's the thing. How many of us take a moment to breathe, to take, you know, a half hour, 5 minutes, 10 minutes a day just to be you? By yourself, like, you know, I don't want to talk to anyone. I just want to be with myself, me, myself, and I having a good time. You know, I mean, it's a very difficult thing, you know, to, I mean, people are watching and listening right now. I'm asking you, if you're listening, you can put this in the comment, you know, have you done that? When was the last time? How good was it? And I think I can say, even for me, I mean, I try to do this, you know, every now and then, but I'm not good at it. And I don't do it on a regular basis, like, you know, steady, you know, every day I got to do this. Now I do other forms of things that help me, but you're right. You know, like when you have that moment and you just by yourself and taking just, you don't want to talk, you don't want to think, you just want to reflect on things. As you said, a good moment, you know, you sit outside, you watch. Sometimes I just watch the sunset. I mean, that's one of the most beautiful things. You just sit there and just glance, you know, and that's it, like stare. And it's pretty good. You go by the water, just look at the water. I mean, one thing I enjoy, I love cruising, and I just sit by the water, just watch the I just love to watch the ocean. I just sit there and just keep staring at nothing but blue, you know, and it's gorgeous. I mean, you know, and you feel a very, very different self, you know, when you do these things. Now I wanted to just ask a question, because you mentioned something that you've thought around the world, different people. Have you found that maybe some people have a better ability than others in terms of, I mean, they do it at their own pace, but like maybe someone with religious, background or religious, you know, more religious, I guess, style would be able to accept it differently than someone who doesn't? Just a question. Someone from a particular, a part of the world will be better than others. You know, what was your take on that one? I mean, because there's got to be triggers.
Capacities. What are some natural capacities?
Yes.
Right. I think those that identify some form of higher power or source, I don't necessarily think that people who are part of a particular religion are necessarily more whole in this way of wholeness, because there's a whole set of reasons as to why we're part of any community that we're a part of. Sometimes we're a part of it out of a hidden sense of it's the right thing to do, or sometimes we're a part of it because we don't know how to find ourselves, right? There are all these ranges of reasons. And I would think if there's a personality style that maybe eases into this living, let's just call it living present, it would be somebody who has the belief system that supports surrender into the moment, and that there is something to trust about life, whether it's a benevolent provider, whether it's life force itself. It could be any number of things that we have what we might call a belief in or a faith in. And I do think that those that have an orientation towards it's not all on my shoulders, there is somewhere for me to turn, or I'm being held by something. I came into form without me doing it all myself, and therefore there must be something going on. That does allow a bit of space for letting go of the way the mind want to control things in a way that's not so helpful. But I worked with people that don't necessarily believe in God and have specific religious backgrounds, and they've been just as capable as well. But I would say that surrender piece, that natural ability to let go. Yeah.
That's a tough one, because that will take courage, right? It takes discipline, it takes will. Now let's talk about that, because again, we are creatures of habit, and as you said, you know, people belong to different things because of sometimes just pressure, because you were born into something, or because that was the culture, because you were taught that's the way to do it. But you know, do we really take the time to kind of remove ourselves from all those attachments and kind of like just be us? without it. I mean, if everyone literally takes a minute, I just think about this now. If we all kind of like just remove everything, like, you know, I just exist by myself on this planet, how would that be?
Right.
I mean, literally, right?
Question, right? Right. That's such a great question. And letting ourselves pose questions like that to ourselves, I think is brilliant. It's brilliant. Think about how that interrupts all the assumptions that go into what we're doing and why we're doing it. Right?
I can just imagine there's like infinite ways to think about that one.
Totally. Totally. And, you know, a lot of the times, not as a dominant, but it's significant enough just based on what you were sharing. A lot of times people can be scared to open up to that kind of getting to know themselves. Let's say it's awakening process, because there could be fear that your whole life is going to totally change. What would happen? Will I find that I can no longer tolerate the job that I've been compromising my whole self in for 20 years for all the right reasons? You know, those fears, what will happen is those fears will all go away. Your life does change, but we don't really know how it changes until we actually let go. Most of the time, we don't lose what we think we're going to lose.
Well, you probably lose things, but those are the anchors, the things that you didn't need in the first place. Because I think that's the weight that's holding you in doing things. And I think from a business perspective, we hear this all the time. You know, we got to let go of things that are just like not necessary, and we need to refresh, restart. And there's always a good time. I mean, today is a good day. Any minute can be a good minute. You don't have to, I missed the boat, it's too late. There's no such thing. I mean, but I think, as you said, the fear of the unknown, the fear of change, the fear of like, how is this going to look now? I mean, I'm going to be a whole different. How are people going to think and perceive me? I mean, that's the other thing, right? Because your attitude is going to change about things. You're not going to be the same person that, you know, your friends will probably like find you a little stranger. You know, your parents like, you know, what the hell? You know, what cult are you part of right now? So, I mean, all these things are what people will probably think about, like, because you're going to become a whole new you. And sometimes people may not like that. And we live in the fact that we're always thinking like what the others are thinking about us. I think that's the biggest, you know, I guess fault of our, you know, kind, is that we always worry about like what people think, the perception of everybody else other than our own selves. I mean, that's I think a problem that we have. I mean, what do you think? I mean, this is your expertise. I'm just asking.
Oh, you're laying down some nice insight and wisdom for sure. And, you know, to put that, even to soften that word expertise. So a life of devotion, I'm 57 now, and, you know, my conscious choice happened when I was 5. So 52 years of adventuring in this realm has made an impact on the way I see things and the skills that I have in that. And at the same time, in these realms, we're children. We're only just learning. And that's part of the breakthrough. That's part of the freedom, is that being an expert means you become a child again. You regain the innocence. There's that phrase, out of the mouth of babes, right? Because children will so often lay down a truth. It's like, you know, any adult wouldn't say or didn't say or couldn't see. But children will see oftentimes right through things. And but there is something to allowing ourselves to recognize that we allow, and we've been taught and enculturated to fit in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and there's a part of ourselves that at a certain part in our evolution process, if you didn't fit in, you were killed. And that's not too long in our past. So it's going to be there in our psyche. There's still going to be those fears of, if I don't fit in, I could get killed. It happens less frequently now. It still happens. We've got stories on media where somebody who stood up for what was really right or true got killed. But by and large, you may get betrayed, shunned, let go from your job. Right, right. We're in culture. We recognize that our true sense of belonging doesn't happen in that way. You know what? I love to use the story in this relation to what you just shared with Gandhi. So think about like somebody like Gandhi or somebody else. And if you think about them, I bet you think of a solitary person. You think of somebody that came into his own. He did so with courage. He did so with veracity. He did so with life commitment. And he embodies a path that many people want to walk, a path of peace, nonviolence, within and without. So when you conjure up that memory of this person, it appears that he's very solitary. I never have anybody give me the image of Gandhi as being part of a crowd. It's just a solitary image. And yet at the same, here's a paradox, at the same time, he is still impacting our world. How often on social media do you see a meme by somebody like Gandhi? Because what he has said has a profound truth to it that's still resonating. So while he's solitary, he is at the same time so connected to humanity that he is still having impact. So see, ultimately, when we come into our own and our wholeness and our truth, we may feel and be scared that we're going to be alone, but we gain the greatest position of belonging and connection. It's just not in all the limited ways, like how I look or what I do successfully.
I think, you know, a great example. I mean, you know, Gandhi and others have taken that path, but then made humongous impact in the world and how things, you know, to date. I mean, some of their teachings are still practiced and taught, you know, and used in a lot of areas, right? And that's the thing. Like, you are changing how you perceive the world, how you actually interact with the world, but now you are a better person, which means your impact is going to be much better than probably, you know, the older self of yours. I mean, because I think that's what it is. I mean, no matter who we are today, if we can get to that level, we become better. And, you know, and that should be something that we should all long to. I mean, we should be like excited about the contest or the concept that we will be a better person. You know, and this is not scary. This is like exciting. I mean, like, hey, if I could elevate myself to a different realm to become a little bit more free. Now, again, here the word freedom can be a little bit misjudged, misconstrued, misdiagnosed. Depends right on how you look at it, because there's freedom of speech, there's freedom, there's politics, there's this stuff. We're talking about freedom of self, spiritual. Like, you basically just detached everything. You are just yourself. And now you can play political if you want. You can play diplomatic, but you're still detached from everything. You can control how you basically are free willy. I mean, you can do whatever you want in a way, because you're in control. And no one can control you. That's the thing. I mean, the ultimate level of freedom is that when nobody can control you, your mind is free. I think that's really what it is. Once your mind is free, the rest is history. No one can stop it. Am I touching on that one? I mean, is that right?
Well, you're speaking of it. And I think the only thing that I would add to it is I see the self as being an aspect of our core nature, that the mind and the body and the heart are just participating in it. So I wouldn't bring it down to the mind, but I do think that I loved everything you said. And I think part of coming into freedom is that, yes, we think clearly, we see clearly. So there is an autonomy that the mind enters into. And that's more of a fruit than it is part of the source. So, and what a great thing. I mean, even this alone, I think of these little examples because I want to shout from the mountaintops about the simplicity around this. Think about even when you have had a thought that you're like, oh, that alone, there, you've connected to your essential nature right there in that thought. You've had a drink at the stream of who and what you are. We've got so many examples that are happening in our lives, even right now, that are easy. And then all we want to do is we just want to remember them and not remember the stresses. And to be gentle with ourselves, because of the primal brain is really still a big impetus in the way we interact in our environment that will create a larger amount of brain chemicals around stressors. So if we can be gentle with ourselves and not think it's our fault because we think only of stress and not of the good things. Remember, oh, that's just my primal brain. Oh, there goes my primal brain being all worried if I'm going to be eaten by a tiger. No. and be a bit more gentle, we can begin to remember all of these life-giving moments that are happening right here and right now.
Well, I can go beyond that. I mean, if you just think about your breathing, I mean, the fact that you are alive, the fact that you see, and the fact that you can hear, the fact that I'm talking about just like being in touch with your senses, you know, I mean, I think what you're really touching on today is having our sixth sense really, you know, utilized in life. I mean, because we know about all our five senses, like we can touch things and sense them with, but this is like the next level thing, you know, whereby we're in control. We can see things differently. We can hear things differently. We can sense things differently. We can feel things differently. It's like, you know, you can feel the energy of everything and every moment is captured. You're not missing anything. You know, I think that's a different level. And ideally, that's what we'd like to be.
Yes. Love it. Well said. That's great.
Well, again, I'm just listening to you. I mean, it sounds like, you know, we ought to have, you know, a moment for ourselves at all times. Now, but here's a question though. How do we manifest that? How do we get there? Because I mean, a lot of people are listening probably now like, well, that sounds good. You know, you guys kind of, you know, are talking about this cool stuff, but how do I get there? Because I don't think I can. So what do we tell them?
No, I think it's brilliant. Well, you know, there's a plethora of resources out there, but we could break it down very simply. It is pretty available to take 5 minutes before you begin your day, even before you get out of bed. So even if you have a very stressful life, and let's say, you know, I have a brother who has four kids, you know, four little ones. I mean, where is he going to find time with a dermatology practice and all the other activities and four kids? There can be a felt sense of it's not possible. The mornings are usually times when we wake a bit more refreshed because of the glymphatic system helping to wash through our brains through the night. So usually in the mornings, we'll have a bit more of a little brightness, even if we're living a very stressful life. And if you would allow yourself just 5 minutes every morning, place your hand on wherever you want, your diaphragm or your chest, and simply for 5 minutes and set your timer and focus on your breathing. And very simply focus on the texture of the breath, how your body feels as you're breathing, what the hand is doing as it moves out and back with the inhale and the exhale, and simply start there, period. Start there. Now, that's an easy way that anybody can start. Anybody can find 5 minutes somewhere in their day. Regularity works well because psychologically, when we have repetition, that's why a lot of people say meditate in the morning or do something, is when we have the repetition, our bodies begin to want it. And when our bodies want it, we get a lot more motivation to stay faithful to what we've made a commitment to. Over and above that, give yourself the opportunity either to have somebody that is a mentor or coach that's along the process for you. They help to reframe things. They can give you optional homework pieces that you can try out for a few weeks till you meet again. That's a really valuable resource. A lot of times people don't have time to join a group, but there's plenty of groups out there. I highly suggest Joe Dispenza's work. He's very popular. He's very powerful in the arena of shifting the quality of your life and living the life you feel you're meant to live or you want to live. And he has little YouTube meditations you can do that are super short. You could go to bed putting one on and go to sleep to it. So it's endless. And if you're listening to this and you want more practical things, you can always email me. I know my info will be in the description. You can email me and I'm happy to throw a couple ideas. But those are really good ones. You know, I've had a support system for myself, and I have been a support system for others for 23 years. And I can tell you, I see the difference when you've got somebody that you're accountable to for this part of yourself, which this part of yourself is you. So when you have somebody outside of you that can reflect back to you what's possible, you tend to rise into it with greater ease. So those are some ideas that
great ideas. And as a matter of fact, you just kind of put everyone that everybody can do this. Everyone can. There's no excuse. I mean, you just simplified it to 5 minutes. And, you know, if you do 5 minutes consistently, things will start changing. You will start getting better and better. So, I mean, it's like, and I love that, because the first excuse everybody says, I don't have time. You know, I can't do this. You know, it's too much, you know, like, because everything is commitment, right? But when you're talking about 5 minutes, can you spare 5 minutes to become better? To because I think here's the great news, is that if you are changing for better, your life and everything else that you're going to touch will be better, and you're going to manifest better, right? So you want this. This is like good meds. This is the real medication. I mean, you know, this is the good natural stuff that you want. And I think we all have the capability to do this. And we're just tapping into a resource that we've had all along. We just haven't been able to bring it to the surface.
Yes. Yeah, I know. Well put. That's really good. And you're right. You're right. And there's lots of other things that I could put out there to do that are all within our reach. You know, I'll give one other example. You can choose at any moment in your day to pay attention to your walking. So you get out of your car to walk into an office, to walk into work, to go pick your kids up, whatever it is. Once a day, say, I'm gonna pay attention to my walking in a way that I just let myself exhale into watching my walking. Feel the steps, feel your steps on the concrete, on the ground. Feel the way your leg lifts as you move. Notice how your focus is. Feel where your shoulders are when you're walking. That is another, I'm just giving some really simple practices. Anybody can do that, right? And you can put a little sticky note, a little sticky note on your phone, in your planner, on your mirror. Today, I'm going to watch myself walk from my office down to the place where I'm getting lunch. Right there.
Everybody can do that too. I mean, these are like, I mean, there's no excuse, folks. I mean, I'm sorry if you're watching or listening, you're caught. You can't have an excuse. You're caught. That's it. This is it. You know, you can't say like, I couldn't figure it. I mean, walking, we all do that. But you know, it's funny. I'm listening to you. There's, and I'm sure everybody who's watching or listening right now can have the same thing. They're probably thinking about 10 other reasons and 10 other things that they can do in the same fashion. I mean, you can just listen to your breathing. You can listen to your heart. You know, you can just stare at something, just nature, look at a tree and just contemplate. You know, look at the stars. I mean, you know, that's a beautiful thing. I mean, at night, if you have stars that you can look at, I mean, sometimes if you're in the city, you're probably not going to be able to see much stars. But look at the moon. You got a full moon. I mean, I'm saying, like, there's so many things that are around us that we can look at on a day-to-day basis and just kind of like, wow, you know. Like I said, you know, you're by the beach, stand on the, you know, on the sand and just look at that whole ocean and just start imagining and thinking about it. I mean, there's so many ways we can do this. Now, mm-hmm. Your work is helping people. Now, how does someone work with you, and how long does it have to take to get, you know, from not, you know, in tune with ourselves?
And that, again, that varies depending on the level of stress and or trauma that somebody's operating from. I usually see a lot of change within 3 months when I work one-on-one with people. Stable change. So my change is can be very dramatic. I've helped people heal from panic attacks and things like that. So it can be very dramatic. but it's a very stable way of changing. It's not a fad diet. It's actually a slow integration of living life consciously. So it's usually 3 months. Now, I used to travel a lot and speak all around the country, and I'm just starting to open those doors again. So I lead retreats. I have an online 2-week meditation course that's coming up, super cheap. It starts on July 15th, only $30. I mean, it's super cheap, and you get all the recordings, and it's just a half hour each day, and it's got a different topic for 2 solid weeks, and you can do it in the group, or you can do it on your own. So I make available a lot of opportunities, but the one-on-one work, it's like anything. You know, if you go to the gym and you really devote time to your body's going to see the results. That's one-on-one time focus you're giving to your body. The same with your inner state. The more you give one-on-one time to yourself, the more you're going to see the results in ways that your whole life changes.
You basically re-assisting people to realign themselves. Yeah. You know, I mean, you know, like, you know, we got to realign you with your own self. And that's a pretty cool thing. I mean, 23 years, how many people you've touched? I mean, countless. And that's got to be a great feeling to know that you've changed people. Now, let me ask you a question. Now, you've lived in a monastery. You've built one, I believe. So it's you know, so that's a little bit of a higher level. I mean, of being, you know, I mean, that's a whole different level, right? Just you know, not to change gears, but you know, was that part of your change? You know, in and becoming better at this. You know, was there anything that you've learned at the monastery that actually made you more advanced into the work you do today?
Absolutely, right. Well, you know, I entered not searching. I entered because I was really on fire. So I didn't enter from the state of I want to get somewhere. I felt complete and full and on fire with love. And I just wanted more of it. It's like a kid who just wants that second bowl of ice cream. I've referred to ice cream twice. I must want ice cream, right? I referred to it twice now in our podcast. So it was a very simple reason that I entered. But can you imagine living 10 and a half years where you're largely living in silence, meditating, chanting, and farming? Like, imagine the effect upon everything within you. I mean, I experienced a lot of shifting within me that allowed me to shed things that weren't serving me and to understand that they weren't serving me. I didn't hold on to them. And a lot of it does have to do with image and reputation, even in the most integrous ways, because caring about your reputation isn't just an egotistical thing in a bad way. Wanting to be a person of integrity, wanting our relationships to reflect that, that's natural to human nature. But anyway, shedding all of those things created a greater simplicity within me. And I do think it's allowed me to be more effective in my service in the world. And building the monastery, and that example is what I believe shows what happens when you open up to your potential. So I see everyone's life in the symbol of they're building a monastery. They're capable, because that monastery is pretty freaking awesome. Look, I mean, it's massive. It's beautiful. It's a miracle the way it happened. And being the one that was the general contractor and stepping into roles I didn't know I was going to do showed me the potential within me. And it let me know that potential is within all of us. It wasn't unique for me. It wasn't like, oh, wow, I'm special. It's that this is part of our nature. Every person is capable of greatness. And so that I use as an example. And so, yes, it definitely did fuel that when I realized I was meant to leave the monastery, it fuels my belief in people. And what's possible for people. So I have a big heart of compassion, and I have a lot of fire for believing in people. So those two serve me really well.
Well, I think if anyone can achieve that, I mean, they're just going to be a better force, you know, in this world. I mean, it's just, and it seems that when you get to that level, things will manifest for you. I mean, your visions will become reality. I mean, you know, it that because I think even for people who go to this from a business perspective, you know, if they really get to that level of finding themselves and discovering their inner selves and being aligned, they probably can achieve great, you know, I guess, outcomes and great, you know, success, and maybe not building a monastery, maybe building a, you know, the biggest, you know, company in the planet. I mean, you know, I'm just saying things can become better for people when they can get there. I mean, this sounds like, you know, like I said, this is the cure for a lot of illnesses of this world that we have today. Wow, interesting. Now, do you do anything with the monastery? I mean, you're still part of it now. What's your deal there?
I left in 2001, and given the nature of my monastic life, there was really the community felt that I was not doing what I was meant to do, because I had taken vows for life, and so I fit. I mean, I'm a real contemplative and a mystic, and so. Because of that, because I knew I was stepping forward in my call, 100%, that I was really in the divine, and that was my next step. And because the belief is the opposite with the monastery, I wasn't really welcome to keep in touch. There was a lot of grief around my leaving. And it makes sense, because if you look at it theologically, if somebody really fits with their call, it could seem delusional to step away from that. But that is another example. I wrote an article that was published years back about this. That's another example about how much we are on this path alone. So from outward appearances, it looked like I was doing the wrong thing. And yet I was 100% clear I was doing what I was meant to do in leaving. And the peace that I had that never left me, the stability of making such a massive life change was there at all times. Everything that I needed was provided for, sometimes miraculously, sometimes just through the systems. So we, over and over again, we will be asked to step into the unknown. And it could be big like that, or it could be really small. And we will be alone in those moments.
You know, you're talking about a paradox. I mean, you're defining that again.
totally right. Totally.
but you know, but that's what it is, right? You know, it's that's how it goes. I mean, it's one, but it's really not the one. It's the other one. It's like it's two in one. It's like two faces of the same thing, right?
Yes.
So I have a very interesting, you know, thing to add to you today is that yesterday I had a show. And we talked about just say yes. Now you literally, you know, promote the idea of say yes to your life. So, I mean, I don't believe in coincidence. I don't know why. I think there's powers, you know, in the universe that kind of manifest things differently. But really, literally last night, the discussion, we had a lot of just say yes, you know, in that particular discussion. And today I'm talking to you and you are the one that's actually always championing the idea of say yes to your life. So why?
Because life said yes to you being here. Source said yes to you being here. If you're listening, you were intended. You came into form to live, period. You came into form to be alive, period. That's end of story there. It may look differently year by year. You may have a different role, a different identity, a different understanding. But life is that from which you came, and in that you are experiencing. So there isn't anything other to saying yes. If you say no, you block the stream, you step away from reality. So you want to say yes because you want to be in reality. That's where you're going to find the happiness. And it's not about finding the happiness, like you have to grasp for it. The saying yes opens the doors to experiencing. And that yes will penetrate all the nooks and crannies where you feel hesitant or afraid or contracted or confused. Your yes needs to go to every part of saying yes to your life. And the why, even though I'm giving my answer to the why, you're meant to give your answer to the why. That's the beauty of being alive. Your being alive is an expression of something inexpressible. And when you say yes to it, then you get to say the why yourself. And when you answer that question in our world, you impact and you celebrate something that is both you and beyond you.
That gives you chills when you hear that. I mean, you know, you get goosebumps with that concept. I mean, I'm sure people are watching like, ooh, this is the deepest thing. I mean, it's really philosophical. It's really deep stuff. I mean, it's the concept of life. Like you're supposed to embrace it. You're supposed to enjoy it, and you're supposed to know your purpose, you know, out of it. And I think we all have a purpose, you know, in what we do. You don't just do things ad hoc. I mean, everybody is meant to do certain things, and so that leads me to one, you know, question that's been like bothering my mind a little bit. And I think, and it's completely simple question is that people may think that, because we want to have more things, more positions, you know, and we don't want, like, everybody talks about more money, more positions, more property, more this, more that, more success. Is this finding the self, you know, a destructive way for all that wellness? Because someone can say, well, I don't want to know about anything because I love what I am today. But will that be a sacrifice? Is there a need for sacrifice? Or it doesn't matter. You can still find yourself and still be successful and still be rich and still have all the possessions of the world. Is that a contradiction or is that the paradox itself?
Yeah. I think you're pointing to something that the collective consciousness has put out there. And that is, for instance, there's a scripture quote, it's better to give than to receive, right? That has oftentimes been interpreted that you shouldn't want to receive, right? That life is meant to be a series of sacrifices, that the person that's most holy is the one that has nothing and keeps giving love. And I think those are misunderstandings. The culture is filled with a lot of conflict around this possession, not possession. And I don't think it has to do with the possessions at all. I think it has more to do with, are we saying yes to the fullness of ourselves? If we said yes to the fullness of ourselves and we happen to own a Maserati and have a home in Hawaii and a home in some other beautiful place that we love, and that there's no contradiction there because we're rooted in the yes of our life. So I don't think it's an either or. I think where there is an intentional reason to question it is to dismantle our motives. Oh, I want more money because I'm terrified of not having food, right? Mm-hmm. Or I want to have all the best clothes because I feel low self-esteem about how I look. So there's a completely different way that we're relating to possessions. Life by its very nature is abundant. We're meant to be abundant. We're meant to live in abundance, to feel abundant. Many people who don't have much feel incredibly abundant in the who and what they are. So I think where you get some of the teachings of you need to not strive after those things is more pointing towards we tend to get attached. We put our identity on it. I'm the best boss ever. And instead of actually getting to know ourselves, we create an identity around something that's just a role, and it's a passing role. So that's where I think we get to do the adventure. See, that's where the juice is to get to know ourselves. What is it that I really want? Really want? Some of the meditation work I do help people get in touch with what their real desires are. And a lot of times the desires are much different than what we think. Do I really want to travel around the world? when I really drop into that, actually, what I really want to do is learn how to play the cello. You know, like it's a matter of getting to know ourselves and not to villainize our desires, but to understand our desires are pointing to our abundant nature, and how we go about it is where there's freedom. So no, I don't think it's necessarily about giving something up, but we do need to give something up if there's a false attachment, right? If we're building up a defense system where our hearts are getting more and more closed to life, and we're getting more and more contracted around the wealth that we've got, and we're living like Scrooge, right? That's a great example of someone. It wasn't about having the money or not having the money. It was about all the fear he had around everything else. And what happened that set him free? Not that he lost all his money. He revisited his life and discovered where he had pain that needed to be healed, lost dreams, loneliness, abandonment. And when he faced all that, when he wakes up from all that or is not visited and it's Christmas Day, what happens? He still got all his money, but he has changed, and now he can live in harmony with his life. So there's a wordy answer for you.
That's powerful. And I think that actually really brings it to everybody's, you know, watching and listening right now. The concept is not so much to give up your life, is to revamp your life and just be a true self. And then you can do better things, you know, better with whatever you have, or maybe even get more of it, you know, but now you're just doing it for the right reasons, not the wrong reasons. Yes. You know, and I think that you hit around the nail, I mean, the money there, because I think that's what it is. We get attached to fluffy, shallow stuff, you know, and we put value to them that may not have anything to do with it. And once we get those veils out and those little masks, you know, those I guess, just forms of our, you know, other self that is not the true, you know, person that we really are, then we, I mean, really, that's what it is. I think we have these layers of masks that we just got to remove to see the true, you know, identity. And once you have that, the rest is history. Well, thank you for that. Now I have a question. Your book, you do have a book.
I do. I have three books, but this is the one that just came out.
Yes, the one that came out. Yeah, that's correct. Ooh, Miracles in...
Oh, sorry. Miracles in the Naked Light.
In the Naked Light. That's right. All right. I like it. And, you know, it zooms in on it too.
I know, right? Like, woo!
That's a good feature on that thing, by the way. It's like, you know, you have your own camera, you know, man, following and doing the stuff there. That's true. You know, you got a cinematic shot there, but it's cool. So what's the book about? Is it the same thing we discussed today, or is it like, you know, a little bit of more intense, deeper?
You'll love it because you referred to the monastery. This is a second book in a trilogy, but this begins the story, gets you halfway through, leaves you hanging. You'll be upset. of when I built the monastery. So when I said yes to that inspiration, I was only 29 years old. I was a monastic nun. I had no idea I would say yes to something like this. I had no idea anything like that would happen. And what it does is it shares the journey. And by virtue of reading it, you're going to get to come into contact with your own self. So I'm not trying to teach you. I'm not like sharing something for the sake of a point, like a teaching book would do, which is valuable. I'm letting you get really deep in the experience. And you see in my own evolution process, how my yes helps me grow and grow in unexpected ways. And it also celebrates the absolutely incredible miracle of the hundreds of people that stepped into the project and made it possible. So that's what that book is about.
All right. And that's available, I guess, on Amazon and all the...
Correct. You can go to my website and that'll give you all the... You can get the audio book, which is in my voice. They recorded it in studio, which is nice. An ebook and the print book. And you can get it through my publisher or on Amazon. Yeah.
You have it. So we got a whole thing. I mean, we have your website. So that's KimberlyBron.com. Is that the website?
Yes.
All right. And then we have the book. So Well, listen, we've exceeded the hour
a
while ago, and I'm not sure about your time, but you know, I think we've covered a lot, and thank you so much. So anything you want to just leave our audiences with before we close the show today?
Oh, wow. We touched on so much. Well, if you're listening today, know that while it's a solitary journey to say yes to your life, it'll be the greatest love affair that you ever experience, the most exciting adventure, and you're not alone. There are individuals like us here having this discussion. Every human being that's having a discussion about saying yes to life is supporting you energetically, intentionally. There have been mantras chanted for thousands of years for your happiness and liberation. That's by hundreds of thousands of individuals. Isn't that amazing? Hundreds of thousands of individuals chanting mantras for your happiness and your liberation for thousands of years. That's a pretty big cheering squad. So I think you've got this.
Well, we all need the cheering squad here, and we need that support. And, you know, I think the more you hear about it, you know, the more we get pumped. We definitely want to get, you know, folks excited and really get into this journey of like discovering, you know, and saying yes to yourself and to your life. And so that's really, you know, the message today. I hope that, you know, we drove that, you know, with our guests, you know. So Kimberly, thank you so much for really coming on, sharing your beautiful 50 years of literally enlightenment, you know, in about an hour and change. So that's pretty good. I mean, you know, considering, you know, the time frame, but I think you've covered a lot of things that, you know, if we practice some of those, and I'm not talking even myself, you know, I'm going to try to do the 5-minute thing every day just to get into it myself.
you know how it goes. That'd be awesome.
I always say this, I'm the first consumer and client of my own shows. I mean, so I get the first dibs, you know, so I'll take that energy and the work, and I practice it. If I can, you know, I would, you know, and I wouldn't even say if I can, because I do know I can. I just need to apply. I think that's the difference. We need to apply, not just to think that we can do it. Like, we don't try, we just do. All right. All right. Well, Kimberly, thank you so much for being with us today. It was real. It was fun. Thank you.
It was lovely. I loved it. Thanks.
You're welcome. And there you go, folks. We're coming to the end of the show. Hope you had fun with us. You've learned a few things. Do check out the website. Do check out the book. And certainly reach out. Like as Kimberly said, if you want more information, you can email her directly. I'll have the description, you know, the link in the description of the show. So please feel free to connect with her. And just follow her work, and you know, and look forward to that. Read the second book and wait for the third one, I guess, this way you don't, you know, hang in there tight, you know, until the next one comes out. So, you know, that's like, you know, you watch those series and you're like, you know, oh, damn, I need to see the next, what's going to happen in part two, interesting one. All right, that's it, folks, for now. You know, American Age, we'll be talking soon. New day, new show, new topic. Bye for now.